Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We're a little off schedule this week by design.
I think we lost Mac Tensey.
Well, we haven't even introduced him yet, McMahon. Jesus, you've messed it up already.
Sorry, we'll start over. I was concerned.
He literally dropped off, Brian.
Yeah.
I know, but don't ruin it.
You were 12 seconds in. It was a great 12 seconds, but start over.
Here we go. Yeah, let's go.
All right. All right, starting over, Jackson. I had such a great intro. 3, 2, 1. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing a little bit off our normal schedule this week because of Thanksgiving. We thought we would give you a little bit of a longer one with a little bit more guests to get you through your travels over the weekend. I'm traveling.
A little variety, some stuffing, some cranberry sauce. Who eats cranberry sauce? I don't. I think it's gross,
but some people
like it.
My mother calls it dressing, not stuffing, which I think is a very old school.
Stuffin. Stuffin.
She says, "Do you want some dressing?" And everybody looks at her weird. That's Ben McMahon, who's joining us from Dallas.
Howdy, partners.
I'm in Cleveland, where I was covering the Nets-Cavs game. First time I've been to a game in Cleveland in 3 years. So how about that?
You get a standing ovation?
No. Joining us in Boston is Timothy Bontemps, who was at the Rockets-Celtics game. We're recording this on Tuesday morning, so this is Monday night. It's always funny when you see the Rockets these days, Bontemps.
Rockets might not be able to beat my St. Bonaventure Bonnies, the one team in New York State who is ranked in this week's AP poll.
Whoa.
One team that's ranked.
So listen to this, McMahon. He's all excited about Bonaventure, okay? He's been talking about this team for months. And over the weekend, they were in the championship game of a tournament in Charleston, South Carolina. They're playing Marquette, who was undefeated.
That's correct.
And Bontemps went to Charleston.
Really? Where were your seats?
Sat right on the court.
Oh, jeez, man. They really treat you like you're somebody. Golly, I don't understand it.
He got to the will call window, and they said, who are the tickets for? And he said, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Oh, yeah.
And they took care of me.
That's what I do. Like, whenever people see me.
Or the
like,
Delta CEO.
CEO.
Whenever people see me in arenas and they don't know who I am, they're like, hey, you're from ESPN. What's your name again? You know what I say?
Woj.
Adrian Wojnarowski. At Adrian Woj on Twitter. Follow me.
I just play my theme song.
That's why every time I ever have to you know, when you have to sign in for a Wi-Fi or something and I want you to give your email, I just put in Tim McMahon at, no, I'm just kidding. Our first special guest out of our normal rotation, he's a regular on the pod, is joining us from New York City today, where tonight he's going to the Lakers Knicks game, which I can't say for LeBron, Dave McMenamin, because, you know, last night I was covering the Nets game. And so these days when they have us cover these games, they have us bring camera equipment. And I had like a jacket and shirt with me in the car. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think I'm going to have to do TV tonight. It's a Cavs Nets game. So I'm leaving the camera equipment and the jacket and shirt in the car, and I'm just wearing a sweater to the game. Screw it. But that's what I would have said about the Lakers-Pistons game the night before. And you had a busy day that day on Sunday, and we have suspensions. First suspension of LeBron's career. Were you surprised? I was surprised, Dave, that he got suspended for that.
Absolutely. I was surprised because, listen, there's no third party justice system of the NBA. The NBA polices its own. So what was the motivation to make this two games for Stewart and one for LeBron? Couldn't they have done one for Stewart, zero for LeBron and kept it moving? I don't quite understand that. You have 19 years of evidence to sift through as to what type of player LeBron is. There's no, in my opinion, clear evidence of his intent other than to get Isaiah Stewart's arm off of him. it was unfortunate he made contact with his face, punched him in the face, whatever you want to call it.
He did punch him in the face, which I think he did on purpose.
Yeah, we don't have evidence of that.
Wait. You think he punched him in the face on purpose?
Well, he cleared him with his closed fist on purpose.
I think he hit him in the face.
That's the point, Brian.
Well, yeah,
I would say not. Like, you're trying to push the guy's arm off your friggin' rib cage.
Well, Isaiah Stewart was called for a foul on the play. People won't remember that. He was called for a foul, and LeBron didn't like it, and he hit him with a flagrant two foul.
He intentionally punched him in the face, what you just said, Brian.
Well, LeBron also probably didn't like the fact that the Pistons were whooping their ass and that the Lakers have been, you know, some variation of horse crap all year long, and he couldn't put his cape on and come back and you know, automatically ride to the rescue. So there was certainly some frustration being released there.
If you look at how the NBA adjudicates these situations.
Ooh, adjudicates.
LeBron, that's McMahon's word. That's McMahon's word of the day.
No, trust me,
I know that one.
He knows it. He's been hearing adjudication.
He's been adjudicated many times. That's right. Yeah. If you look at how the NBA adjudicates these situations, LeBron's action started the incident, and he had a closed fist and hit Isaiah Stewart. And you put those two things together, that's why he got a game. And it makes sense why Isaiah Stewart got more games, because Isaiah Stewart acted
more
like a lunatic, right? It was very funny when the internet synced up the Stone Cold Steve Austin music with him faking that he was fine and then storming back through. I mean, you cannot have somebody acting like that in a game. And he also just did this recently, kind of went off after Blake Griffin hit him in a game against the Nets. So I get why they gave him two games, but I think it would have been very hard for the NBA to get away with not giving LeBron a game.
I disagree.
Based off of how he,
what would have been hard, Tim? What would have been hard?
I think again, he appeared to hit Isaiah Stewart with a closed fist in the face. I do not think he was trying to punch him in the face, but he did hit him with a closed fist in the face.
He didn't intend to punch him in the face, but he did punch him in the face.
No, he probably intended to punch him in the
That's
arm
what started this
throat.
Conversation though. Like, that's what the conversation's about. If you're trying to get a guy's arm off of you and you hit them, that's one thing.
Guess what? If you punch in an NBA game, period, you're putting yourself at risk of suspension.
He hit Isaiah Stewart above the shoulders with a closed fist,
and he was ejected for it. That was what was appropriate. That was he was appropriately ejected. End of story.
Listen, here's the deal, though. If this had happened to any other player, basically in the league, okay, and they were not playing the Knicks in MSG on national TV in the next game, everyone would have expected them to get a game suspension. The reason we're having this discussion is because, as you and Dave both have pointed out, LeBron has a very long track record of not having dirty plays in his career. And it's LeBron James.
Yeah,
and LeBron James getting suspended is a huge deal.
And the NBA league office looked at this and said, man, there's no way we cannot. So, trust me. It pained them to have LeBron's one visit to Madison Square Garden not happen. And like Bontemps said,
on national TV, they basically looked at this
and they said, there's no way we can not suspend the guy. Basically, the perception will be that LeBron can do whatever the hell he wants and he's running the league unless
the players already can do whatever they want. And this is the problem. There is no standard. Now, maybe they are establishing a standard. The standards have been all over the place for the last 2 years. And since Kiki Vandeweghe left his post, the standards have been all over the place. Guys have hit other guys.
Well, hold on. I mean, he left this summer. I would not say that the standards are all over the place over the past.
The standards for suspensions are all over the place. There have been.
Well, because Brian, you just defined how these suspensions are meted out. Well, didn't Markieff Morris start the incident with Nikola Jokic? He wasn't suspended.
He also didn't draw six pounds of blood.
He did not hit him in the head with a closed fist. That if you look over the past few years at incidents that have involved that, guys get suspended every time, pretty much.
Give me an
also, Nikola Jokic gave Markieff Morris about a 10-game suspension.
Well, generally, you don't see a lot of guys hitting people with a closed fist. But, like, I remember Serge Ibaka's had multiple of these where he's gotten suspended at different points in his career for punching guys. Like, the bottom line is if you hit a guy above the head with a closed fist, that's where the league is going to that's like a trigger for the league on stuff. If you look at how they handle stuff.
By the way, I mean, it is what was the most entertaining part of the fight? Was it the Russell Westbrook, you know, fighting Irish stance?
That was no, amazing. It was Isaiah Stewart. It was Isaiah Stewart telling the everyone he was breaking. Good, walking all the way back to the other end of the court, and then like a five-year-old trying to run around his parents to get the candy, going, now I'm going after them, and sprinting back the other way.
No, five-year-olds aren't running mom and dad over. Like
well, yeah, right.
I mean, that's why he had to get – I saw people saying, how could he get more games than LeBron? I mean, look. You cannot be doing that on an NBA court. You cannot.
No. He was
absurd.
He was out of control. Now Russ though was hilarious. Like look, Russ with Isaiah Stewart trucking people like that. Dude, you ain't. You better. The one thing he did smart was he did his little "ooh, I'm a fighter" pose behind people.
Yeah,
I will say this. What do you think? Like Russell Westbrook's fighting style. I'm going to guess he throws a ton of punches and doesn't land many. I'm guessing it's a lot like his scoring style. He is a volume puncher. Now, I wouldn't want to fight him because he's going to land some, but he didn't want to fight Isaiah Stewart looking like that.
I just wouldn't want to be messing with Isaiah Stewart, period. Which is why he got multiple games. And I think that was fair too. I mean, I thought it was fine the way the penalties went down. I thought,
Dave, I wonder.
I just thought it made sense.
Dave, I wonder if LeBron had come out after the game and said, hey, I totally did not mean to bash him in the head. I was just trying to get his arm off of me. I apologize to him, which apparently is the way he felt. There's a history that if you come out and show your contrition after the game, that might have helped it, and he would have like made a public apology to him, because I don't think he intended to bloody his face. He, you know, at the moment of the injury, tried to like sort of go over there, and Isaiah got up angry, which I get. He had been bashed in the skull, so I get why he was angry in the moment, not 2 minutes later when he was being rampaging. But I wonder if LeBron, I mean, because you know, to me, you know, not talking to the media in that situation. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have been surprised if they told Isaiah Stewart to go home, if they didn't put him in a car and get him off the premises. I wasn't surprised he didn't talk to the media. He might've done something wild. I thought LeBron could have talked to the media after the game and made a contrition there. It might've helped his
case. I mean, if that is the case, then it proves that this entire suspension process is just about optics, because obviously they interviewed LeBron, the league, they investigated the incident. LeBron had an opportunity then to apologize or explain. So,
I want to ask you a question. Do you, so you think that if like, I agree with you, he was not meaning to do that. Right. But if you think that he shouldn't get suspended for punching a guy in the face and causing his face to get cut open like that, intentional or not.
I mean,
I've seen guys bloody people's faces and not get suspended.
Let me ask you this.
He was kicked out of the game already. So it's like, it's not. So he's.
Yeah, but losing Isaiah Stewart hurt the Pistons more than LeBron leaving hurt the Lakers. I mean, those pesky Lakers, boy, they came back. What a valiant comeback that was by those pesky Lakers. I tell you what. Let me ask you this. If Alex Caruso threw that punch, would he be suspended?
I mean, if you can't, my point across the board, no matter if it was Talen Horton-Tucker or Austin Reeves or LeBron James, if you have not had a history of doing those type of things in this league and you can't prove that he intended to punch a guy in the face and he's already been kicked out of the game, so the punishment has already been handed over, I don't know why you have to have him miss another game. I don't know why Isaiah has to miss two games. Isaiah didn't throw a punch.
Well, Isaiah completely lost his mind.
So I give Isaiah one game, give LeBron zero, and keep him moving.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the NBA could have been creative with the punishments. Like, if they really wanted to punish LeBron and not hurt the fans, they'd have said, okay, LeBron, you're playing in Madison Square Garden. but DeAndre Jordan has to start and play at least 35 minutes.
I will say this, DeAndre Jordan got in front of the charging bull.
Was it Wob that said the best defense DeAndre's played in years?
I mean, real talk here, like in that situation, like the Lakers' job, the players and coaches who are on the court, their job is to protect LeBron.
Oh, for sure.
And DeAndre Jordan got out there.
He earned his minimum deal on that one, boy.
I'm serious. Like, he went out there and was like, I'm going to get in the way of you and LeBron. And frankly, like, you don't want him getting involved with Westbrook, because Westbrook will do crazy stuff and will get suspended. So,
and also DeAndre squashed Jordan, like a bug by Isaiah Stewart.
Well, if you want to sacrifice anybody up who's not important to the Lakers, it is DeAndre Jordan.
I think DeAndre Jordan should get a gold star for that. I'm serious.
I thought Bontemps was about to take a little rust jab there. You disappoint me again, Bontemps.
he's more important than DeAndre Jordan to the Lakers.
I also think that LeBron's always been a guy. He's only a couple times in his career where I feel like he's truly shown any, one time was, believe it or not, against Spencer Hawes. He went after Spencer Hawes in a playoff game.
Yeah, another time against Eric Spoelstra.
There's only been a couple of times where LeBron has sort of stepped to a guy. Mostly his court have been the old hold me back. But I got to tell you, like, LeBron wanted to stay away from Stewart, and I don't blame him.
Well, what's he going to do? Fight and get suspended for half the season? And yeah, I mean, come on. Like, Stewart lost his cool. LeBron is wise enough to know.
I'm not saying he wanted to get into a fight. He didn't want to, he didn't want to. I mean, when they were chest to chest, Stewart just yelled at him. Okay. Then he got the rampage later on. But, he kept getting madder and madder. I mean, the blood started pouring out of his face when his blood pressure went up. I mean, I don't need to be a doctor to figure that out. Like,
I spoke to someone close to Isaiah, who told me that one of the subsequent charges that he made was when he realized that he was bleeding. Like, at first he didn't even recognize what was going on. And then he became aware of the blood, which caused him to want to confront again.
Well, he is by all accounts a really great kid, but between this and the Blake Griffin incident recently, he's earning a bit of a reputation for losing his cool in these types of situations. And, I certainly think, hopefully this is sort of the end of that, because he is a pretty nice young player for the Pistons. And, you don't want to become known as a guy who's, getting involved in situations like this.
You also don't want beef with Stu.
I mean, that is also true. He is not a guy to be messed with, put it mildly.
Well, the interesting thing is, they kind of like, the Nuggets play the Heat again next week. I think it's early next week.
Sometime soon, yeah.
And then
Lakers play the Pistons next week, though.
Right. So there's two quick turnarounds here. I don't anticipate there being much of an issue here. In fact, I would suspect when the interviews come out that LeBron will, I don't know for sure, but I suspect he'll be contrite. I'm sure he's not happy about the suspension. I wouldn't be. He also will not be happy about losing $300,000, because even if he's got hundreds of millions, LeBron's not about losing $300,000. So I guarantee that he was pissed off about that. I don't think that much of an issue. Now, the Lakers or the Nuggets Heat, that could be a different situation. There was a lot of bad feelings about that. And the fact that Markieff Morris looks like he got significantly injured with that hit is probably not helped the situation.
Yeah, so, but you know what?
If Jokic got one game for that. Same for LeBron.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Blindsided a guy after he had already gotten in a scuffle with Cameron Payne in the playoffs, another cheap play.
Well, okay, no. First of all, if you take a cheap shot at a guy like Markieff Morris did, don't immediately turn your back, okay? It's like Mac 10. When I mouth off to you and I call you like Mac 10 seed or whatever, I don't turn my back because I'm ready for it. You can't, oh, wow, I was so innocent. My back was turned. Bull crap. You took a cheap shot in the guy's ribs. when you were getting your butt kicked late in the game, then you want to act surprised that he's mad. Like Markieff Morris, you asked for trouble,
especially against
us. Don't turn you. He made it worse on himself,
especially against an Eastern European.
Yeah, don't do it to a Serbian.
Really. Well, so we're saying, if you compare, relitigate that one, then you're saying Morris should have gotten more punishment, not Jokic.
No, I would say
Jokic delivered the punishment. Justice was served.
I would say if you look at that situation compared to this one, Jokic escalated the situation as Isaiah Stewart escalated the situation. He got a game. Markieff got none. In this case, LeBron got one. Isaiah got two. What's the difference
between what Markieff and LeBron did? Both of them were cheap shots.
Markieff hit Jokic in the shoulder with his elbow, and LeBron hit Isaiah Stewart in the face with his fist.
Well, and look, Markieff he got his suspension. It was just because he got hurt. And then I'd have to do math, which God knows I'm not good at, but his $50,000 fine, I'm guessing, is more than equivalent to the money that LeBron's getting hit with.
That may be true.
I thought LeBron would get an additional fine, not suspended. But Bontemps, if this is the way they're going to be now, then I'm going to hold them to it. If they're going to say that you can hit somebody with a cheap shot without hitting them with the fist, and it's just a fine, not a suspension, I'm going to write that down right over here. And if you hit somebody with a closed fist and it is a suspension,
why are you
going to write that
down? Hotel room?
I'm not.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to relitigate the Markieff Morris punishment or whether I thought was a really dirty play. But ultimately, if you over time, they're like you, the closed fist thing is like a red line for them. So when I saw him, when I saw LeBron hit him like that, he did immediately turn around and go, man, it clearly looked like you said, I didn't mean to do that. And I'm sure he didn't mean to try to punch him in the face. But when he did that, I thought that had a good chance of being a game. So I was not surprised at this game. And I think if it was anybody else, we wouldn't really be having this discussion about it.
Just for my wall here, is closed fist worse than an elbow? Closed fist is worse than an elbow. Because I've seen guys.
Bring your face over here. Let's do a test.
I think if you asked the league, they would say, yeah.
Okay.
Does it matter if it's the heel of the fist versus the knuckles of the fist? Because it was the heel of the fist.
I'm not making the punishments here. I'm just going off of the way they've done. Like
you would, I will say this.
You would enjoy that job way too much, Tim, if you had it.
Yeah, you elbow somebody in the face, I think you're getting at least a game as well. Like if you elbow somebody in the face and draw blood, you're gonna get a game.
Yeah, I mean that very well could happen too, but
In honor of Carmelo,
go ahead. Sorry, Dave.
Oh, I was just saying, in honor of Carmelo Anthony and the Lakers playing at Madison Square Garden tonight, can we discuss the worst, most inappropriate suspension in league history? Where Melo barely made contact with Marty Collins, got 15 game suspension. 15 games. You guys remember that? 15 games.
I didn't know Melo could backpedal that quickly.
Melo could have helped up the Orange.
You know that by watching transition defense.
The league was I knew that. the league was still so afraid of his own shadow coming after the Detroit Pistons Indiana Pacers incident that they decided that's what they needed to do. And in this case, the league is afraid of the perception that LeBron runs it. Yeah, I felt like this is what they needed to do. That's what it really is happening here, guys.
Well, but they felt like it was so blatantly obvious that they couldn't get away with not suspending.
I think to your point, Dave, if Talen Horton-Tucker was the one who hit Isaiah Stewart in the face if it just transposed them out, if it's Talen Horton-Tucker who makes that play and the same thing happens, I think he gets a game suspension and everybody goes, yeah, that makes sense and moves on.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're having this discussion now. I think it's fair it's different because LeBron does have a very long track record and he is LeBron James. They are playing the Lakers on national TV today. All those things I think are true, but I think that the reason we're having this discussion is because it's LeBron involved. I think if it was virtually anybody else in the league, nobody would have really batted an eye at him getting the game personally.
I will say this. I was out on the court with the, with the Nets pregame Monday night. Durant and Harden were out there doing the pregame shooting when the news of the suspension came down, and everybody passed the news around really quick. And there were people on the court who were surprised that the league suspended LeBron for that.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people were surprised LeBron got suspended. Yeah. I would also agree with that for sure.
What are we calling that interaction? I labeled the Gobert Miles Turner thing a kerfuffle. So somebody else referred to it as a hootenanny, which I thought was more appropriate, actually. What was the LeBron Isaiah Stewart thing?
If I went with fracas. I went with
fracas. Okay, I was going to say brouhaha. I think fracas is appropriate.
With your time in reform school, you're the one who should be labeling these sorts of situations, I think. So
it was a character development school.
Have you guys all punched someone in the face? I don't think I've ever punched anyone in the face. My brothers and I got in some scuffles in the day. Scuffles. I don't know if ever.
Brouhahas.
I don't think any closed fist punching.
I have punched people in the face, not in 25 years. I've broken my hand multiple times punching people in the, actually twice as multiple, but punching people multiple. In the face.
Wow.
So
least surprising development of the entire
podcast. Some people have a glass jaw. I've got a glass right hand.
So I assume that you did some damage if you broke your hand.
The first was at old Hilltop Park.
You should have seen the other guy.
No, Mac Tinsley, you'll appreciate this. The dude stole my Nike Air Assaults. They were like snake skin on the, you know, snake skin and white and red Nike Air Assaults. Dude stole them out of my locker.
Then
wore them to school. So, dude, you can't stand for that. You got to meet at Hilltop Park after school. And I will say I got the best of that one, but my baseball.
Did you get your shoes back?
Yeah, I got my shoes back. Did get my shoes back. He done some skateboarding in them and scuffed them up a bit, but I got them back.
I follow like 15 sneaker accounts on Instagram. My favorite meme of the Isaiah Stewart incident was when you see the FedEx delivery guy wearing your sneakers.
That's pretty good too.
Yeah. Tim, we should get. Can we get the guy you punched in the face on the pod?
I must say I have not had any interactions with that gentleman in about 30 years. We could get a guy that I've punched in the face on the pod. I'm sure.
I was going to say, if Brian was worth his salt as a host, he would Maury Povich this thing and bring on the guy right now. Tim McMahon, guess who we have? Special guest.
All right, Dave. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Enjoy your holiday, and I hope there's no more fight coverage. Actually, do I hope that? I'm just saying that. No, I hope there is more.
No, we don't want more fight coverage. We don't need that. Fight. We want people playing
far
basketball.
Superior sport. It doesn't need bench clearing brawls. It doesn't need hockey where they allow the guys to fight as part of the damn game. Let's clean it up. Let's go back to playing. Whoa. Beat
Whoa!
That
hey,
out. Let's
woo,
go back
woo,
to
woo,
playing
woo.
Basketball.
Everybody's okay. Frustrated in Laker land.
All right. Thank you, guys. David.
Yep.
Speaking of punchable faces, here he comes.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
It's
Speaking of Syracuse,
jolly old knee jerk Nick Friedel.
That our next special guest on this Thanksgiving special is Nick Friedel joining us from San Francisco,
where he's
another graduate of the school
he's
that lost to Colgate on Saturday.
Guy was scouting lottery picks to start the season. Now he's planning the Warriors parade.
Where did this come from?
Hey, what are you talking about? Where did this come
where
from?
Where did you pull? Oh, well, you're planning the parade. When did that ever happen?
I listened to you.
You absolutely have dreamed this one up.
No. I listened to you.
Stuff
I listened to
out
you.
There in Dallas, so I'm sure.
McMahon,
it's legal where you are.
What's the big – what? There's the laugh. What's the bigger L, McMahon? Cuse losing to Colgate on Saturday or Friedel's Warriors take for the season? What's the bigger?
Well, I got to tell you,
I thought they were going to be a 4 seed. It's still possible. I loved it. Like it's turned into, they were never going to be any good. I thought they were like the 4 seed in the
West.
They
were calling you Eeyore on the low post pod and instead of Jackass, which is already taken by Wendy.
It's just, I started hearing my phone started going off, band is all over you. And I'm like, what the hell did he say now that I had them in the lottery? I mean, that's just complete.
You had the Warriors Rockets rivalry being refreshed and fighting for the first pick in the draft.
No.
You should be absolutely ashamed of your. I hope you personally apologize to Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Draymond Green.
I had Juan Steph Connell as the Anderson. MVP. I mean, Steph is the MVP, but yeah, they weren't going into the playoffs. Sure. Oh, okay. That makes total sense. They have exceeded my expectations for sure. But here's another little treat. They've exceeded their own expectations. I don't think anybody in that entire room thought they would be 15-2, 17.
Oh, you mean they didn't think they were going back to 14-15 this season, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, this is an awesome ride that the Warriors are on to start. And certainly, while I thought there was a chance they could be maybe the 4 or 5 seed, I never thought they were going to be the best team in the West a month in. But as Draymond pointed out the other night, guys, this is a team that still hasn't played that many people. They haven't been on the road that much. Mm. Everybody's focused on that win in Brooklyn. They should be because it was dominant. But let's go back to the next couple months and see where they're at after that. But give me a break. You goofball, McMahon. I never said, yeah.
We can pull clips.
Pull them. Pull
you had a clips. Microphone. You had a microphone in front of your face.
Pull all the clips you want. You're never going to find that I was like, I don't think they're going to the playoffs. I did not think they were going to be this good. More power to them that they are. And Clay,
you didn't think they were going to win 15 games all season long.
Oh, hey, Windhorse, remember last week when you shouted that it was your pod and took control? I think you might need to take the wheel back from Ben McMahon, who is just going on an unbelievable rant here.
You know, my job in my career is I sort of analyze and tell you what's going on. Let me tell you what's going on here. What's going on is that Bontemps, he went to Bonaventure. And he, you know, Bonaventure has an inferiority complex against Syracuse. Okay. Well, Syracuse just lost to Colgate. And we've got McMenamin on the pod. Bontemps is going after him. We got Friedel, another Syracuse guy on the pod. Bontemps feeling chesty because his Bonnies are like really good. He is going after him. But Bontemps doesn't know is our producer, Jackson, also went to Syracuse. So
In the comments before while we were on, Jackson was talking about how if Isaiah Stewart had gone to Syracuse instead of Washington as a Rochester, New York native, Jimmy Boeheim would have kept him in line. I was well aware of Jackson's allegiances to the Cuse. So I was just keeping him out of the firing line because he's a nice guy. So I was just going after these other guys.
Are you that's saying Friedel's CNLs. Not?
Oh, I just wanted to get the laugh track going. That's all. I figured it would get a chuckle out of him. Instead, you were railing on him too much, so he had to defend himself. I didn't get the laugh I was looking for.
Nick, I got a laugh the other night when Draymond had that press conference. Who did they beat on Sunday?
Toronto.
And he sort of gives this soliloquy. It was after questions. You know, Draymond is typically really good in press conferences, so I always appreciate that. But he was talking about, you know, how he wanted to get back to being an all-star defensive player of the year. And it was so
funny. By the way, a month into the season, he's going to win that award.
We don't give awards a month into the season.
But, Mac 10 had Melo winning Sixth Man of the Year.
Where did Melo go to school?
By the way, as I said earlier,
he might have helped against Colgate on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm glad you repeated that, because in the middle of that, I mean, we have too many people on this podcast, but I'm allowing it because it's Thanksgiving. I'm trying to get a little levity. But
Bonte, we need some levity after that difficult discussion about LeBron being suspended for the first half an hour. We have to get the laugh track on to create some levity here.
Anyway, so Nick, Draymond is giving this soliloquy about how he thinks he wants to be an all-star again. He wants to be, defensive player of the year. And he's kind of, you know, just a little bit beating his chest going, you guys thought I was done. People were criticizing me. You know, he was sort of having a moment, but within the same soliloquy, without taking a question, within the same thing, he said, well, you know, the last 2 years I played like bleep.
Right.
And we're like, that's why people were saying that about you, Draymond, because you played like bleep. So I'm glad now that we have that, you know, on the table, now we can talk about how you're playing this year.
That was quite the Draymond moment. And that was an acknowledgement of which anybody who had watched the last couple seasons could tell you, but hearing it from him was a little different. But B, that's another example of why this team is feeling so good about itself in the last few weeks, and they should be. Because for as much as we can focus on Steph and we don't give awards out a month in, but I'm with Timmy B, not only would Draymond be the defensive player of the year, but Steph would be the MVP right now. He's that good. But the difference is that the reason the Warriors have started the way they have is because of Draymond. He's been the engine defensively. He's been unbelievable coming off that gold medal winning performance in Tokyo with Team USA. He's in shape. I thought the funniest thing to me, guys, was that Draymond the other day, on top of saying, hey, I didn't play well the last couple of years, and my kids haven't really seen me play good in a few seasons, is he's like, I've really stopped drinking. He's like, I went after it pretty hard. And when we would get off the plane on road trips, I would be creaking down the stairs and it would be hurting. And now I'm bouncing off the stairs and I'm running down and I'm ready to roll. So he is in great shape. He's in a great mood, which I think is also very, very important. And the reality is all these guys are feeling great about their chances because they know Klay Thompson is coming back in a few weeks. And that jolt emotionally has been huge for this group, whose expectations in the first 6 weeks of the season for where they could be at the end have changed.
Well, look, Draymond was the author of one of my favorite quotes in recent years about the league, when he talked about the difference between 82 game players and 16 game players, right? Draymond is sort of the ultimate 16 game player, in that when you look at where the league has gone with his ability to play at center in that death lineup, that was the thing that turned Golden State into the juggernaut that it's been. And now they're back to doing that with the group that they have. But like you said, Nick, the last couple of years, Draymond's a very smart guy. He knew the Warriors really didn't have a chance to be a 16 game team. And so he didn't really put in the same kind of effort that he is now. And you go back, like we talked about in the pod last week, you and I were both at that game in Brooklyn. He was running around like an absolute whirling dervish, guarding Durant, tipping balls everywhere, causing fast breaks. Like, just, he was all over the place on the court. And his energy level, like you said, his activity and energy level and engagement, like, Steph has been dominant, but Draymond has always been the engine of that team. And you look at the way he's playing, you know, he smells it and sees it, and they're all following along behind those two guys. And, you know, like you said, it's like we got in a time machine and went back to 2014-15, and they're rolling along again.
Yeah, and bringing Iguodala back is a huge part of that too. And, you know, just from afar,
I didn't even think, I thought nothing of that. I thought, okay, they're bringing him back.
He's beyond done in Miami. Great. He looks completely revitalized playing in that system at Golden State. It's unbelievable how much better he looks.
We should throw this in, though, as far as Andre goes. He's missed the last three games with a sore knee.
Yeah.
That is not a good sign when you're 37 and you have that many miles in the game. They've been trying as hard as they can to give him off days, give him practice time off. But when you have a random sore knee and it's kept you out for almost a week's time now, it's something to keep an eye on because, Timmy, you are 100% right. If you are picking somebody who is not Steph or Draymond, and the reason why this team has been playing the way that they have, any one of those guys in that locker room says, Andre Iguodala being on the floor is the ultimate safety net. And he's teaching all these younger kids where to be and how they need to play in this system. He is beloved by his teammates. He is beloved by the coaches. And he can still have an impact off the floor. But when he's on the floor, it is that much more important.
You know, it's crazy because we're talking about Draymond being as dominant as he's been defensively. You know, so we're discussing one of the all-time great defensive players playing at a peak level. And then if you just look, and, you know, stats don't always tell the whole story, but if you just look at defensive rating, it's their bench guys that are the best. Like, Draymond's outstanding, don't get me wrong, but it's their bench guys. I mean, Iguodala, Gary Payton II, Kuminga. I mean, their bench, like, these guys are just not fun to play against.
Jordan Poole is another guy who has gotten better in the last, I'd say, year. And to see the leap that he's made from his rookie year where he was awful to now where he is confidently dropping 30 points a game without breaking much of a sweat, he is exactly the type of player they're going to need when Klay does come back to be that offensive booster from the bench. And when you have Poole and you have Damian Lee, he played really well to start the year. He hasn't played as well lately, but he's been solid. Juan Toscano-Anderson hasn't really played that much this season, but go back to that game in Cleveland the other night, and he really made a difference late. So you have all these guys who know how to play alongside the Stephs and the Draymonds and Iguodalas and the veterans like Porter and Bielitsa. They have also had some solid performances along the way, and they all know where to be. So you have a deep, deep team that starts to believe in itself even more when you're seeing Steph knock down 30-footers and Draymond playing at the level defensively that he's at. And everybody starts to look around and go, wow, we really may be this good. And it's probably the biggest surprise of the season so far.
And again, there's all these whispers about people who've watched him shoot, people around the Warriors. There's these whispers about Klay. People are whispering. And I'm going to keep my expectations very low. We're talking about a guy who has missed a year and a half with two awful injuries. Or 2 years. I mean, I guess the injury, the first injury happened in the June of 19. So 2 years. So I'm going to keep my expectations very low. I think that's fair to him. But having said that, you have not been around this league talking to people without hearing about what people are saying about Klay.
And obviously, all he's got to do is be better than Damian Lee, in all seriousness, to make an impact on the team. Like, if he comes back at 80% or better of what he was before, like, then, you know, that's a scary move. But just to upgrade their roster, if he's just a solid wing who hits some threes for them and plays a little defense, that's a pretty significant upgrade on where they're at right now.
Well, and they don't need him to be that guy on Christmas Day or in January or in February. Like, if it's a slow ramp up and he's 80% of himself come playoff time, that's a huge bonus.
Nick, how much have you seen of him? How much have you seen him work?
A little bit, because what's happened a few times is that when practice has ended, Klay wants to be out of the spotlight, away from any cameras that may be down there. And he's been getting his workout in on the Chase Center floor. And for those who haven't been there yet, the Warriors in their new building, they have a practice facility downstairs, and then they have the game floor that you see on TV day to day upstairs. And so Klay goes and works out with a handful of assistants. And most of that has been, to this point, a lot of one on zero work. But as Steve Kerr told us last week, the 5-on-5 is here. I think the practice time is coming, and it's only going to be a few more weeks. And when you watch him, he looks like the same guy. Now, how that translates once games start and once he's going to have to play defense at a very high level if they want to go far in the postseason, we'll see. But when you watch him run up and down the floor and you're watching him take the shots from all over the place and knock them down, he looks like the Klay Thompson of old. And that's why the optimism that you were referring to internally is there, because the Warriors personnel are seeing the same things day by day by day. They're seeing the consistency from Klay that we're used to seeing, but everybody knows that it's going to be different once the intensity of a real NBA game starts. But all signs to this point have been very positive. And in the brief moments of time where I've been able to watch him, you wouldn't notice a difference in the way in which he's going up and down the floor.
So I was around the Nets this last day or so. You know, like you were talking about Iguodala, I can't believe how much LaMarcus Aldridge is helping them. Mm-hmm. He saw this coming. He had a double-double on Monday night. And, you know, they actually struggled to beat the Cavs without the Cavs were missing their best player. It wasn't the greatest vote of confidence for the Nets, but they still won. Blake Griffin not looking good right now, but Aldridge
Blake Griffin looks donezo.
Aldridge looks really good, helping them way. Like, again, when they signed him, I was like, okay, that's good. You know, we'll see. That's what I thought about Iguodala. Aldridge is really helping them. And since I know you've been around the Nets a little bit, Nick, you talk about some surprises that they've got. One of the surprises on the Nets right now, and I think it's funny, but it's also revealing. This rookie they got, Cam Thomas. So he can play. And I'm going to tell you, Durant really likes him. And if Durant likes you, you're going to get more of a chance. And I think they're going to
get a 4-year, $40 million contract.
That's right. And then get bought out.
That's right. And then go be security for the Lakers.
He had a good game on Monday. He had a 46-point game in the G League over the weekend, which, you know, when the roster guys come down to the G League, they run every play for him. But still, you got to put it in the basket.
So I called that the J.J. Barea D League test, going back to the Fort Worth Flyers. When J.J. was a rookie, they sent him down there for two games. He had 40 and 35. If you're an NBA player, you get sent down there, you dominate.
Cam Thomas played against – to make fun of Bonaventure for a second, Cam Thomas played against us in the first round of the tournament last year, and I think scored 9,000 points in a game where LSU drilled us in the first round. So I don't know how much fun he necessarily is to play with, because he likes to shoot and isn't so much about passing, but he definitely knows how to score.
Durant wants guys to shoot, and you know, Joe Harris is hurt right now, and there's some belief in the league that if the Nets want to up, it doesn't even need sourcing. If you look at analysis on the roster, if the Nets had to make a trade, the player that they have that they could trade that has value that could get them pieces in return is Joe Harris. Mm-hmm. Okay. But you can't move Joe Harris unless you have a really good shooter to play on the perimeter there. And I'm telling you, watch out for this kid, Cam Thomas. And so last night after the game, now Cam Thomas is listed at 6'3". I'll give him the benefit that he's 6'3". It's kind of hard to judge when you're around a bunch of tall guys. But he's a lot shorter than Durant. He's 6 or 7 inches shorter than Durant, maybe more.
Well, then you're saying 6'6".
He's a lot shorter. I think he's a lot shorter than that.
All right. Standing next to Durant, he looks like he's a foot shorter, if you want the truth. But according to the roster, he's 7 inches shorter. I think it's more than that. Okay. So he comes in after the game and says nonchalantly, yeah, I beat KD in one-on-one this morning. And I was like, the hell you did? I mean,
he does not lack for confidence. Mr. Thomas.
That is for sure. So, but I was like, he said this in front of the cameras, like, you know, he's announcing this, but he said it like it was nothing. Yeah. I beat him this morning, a one-on-one. I'll beat him again. So So KD comes in like about 10 minutes later. And as KD's walking in the room, he doesn't even wait to sit down. He's like, I heard Cam Thomas came in here and say he beat me one-on-one. I want you to know I beat him 13-5. In fact, now that I think about it, it was 15-5. And from here on forward, I'm going to have a running total and I'm going to give you updates throughout the season. It's 15-5 right now. We're not going to reset the score. It's going to keep going. And tomorrow it's going to be 25-5. And while that was all funny and everything, by the way, I believe it. Maybe Cam is getting some baskets on him, but he is not winning against Durant one-on-one.
He's also not much about playing defense, Mr. Thomas. So I don't think he's going to be stopping Kevin Durant.
It was a fun little thing. But my takeaway from that is Durant really likes him. Durant wouldn't be messing with him like that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff on social media of him working out with Harden and Durant over the past few months.
As a quick aside, one of my favorite memories from any of my time ever covering the NBA was USA Basketball in 2014. They were getting ready for the World Championships in Spain, and they had a week in Vegas where they practiced. And after practice for two or three days in a row, Kevin Durant, Paul George, and James Harden would play each other in successive one-on-one games.
It was awesome.
McMahon, what do you call? I mean, it's like we would have called the King of the Mountain when I was a kid. But you know, you play the guy one on one, and then the winner stays on the court, and the other guy comes out. This was when Harden was just ascending to like MVP. He was already a stud, but he was ascending to that MVP level. Paul George, unfortunately, later that week broke his leg. Paul George was at the peak of his powers, and Durant was obviously an MVP already. Watching those guys compete, I mean, and like, this was no BS after practice. Let's just not break a sweat. They were working. And I'm telling you, you could have sold pay-per-view to that 30 minutes and you could have got millions. I mean, watching that was some of the most amazing stuff I've ever seen. But that's a digression about one-on-one. I think Brooklyn, as we go forward here in a reality without Kyrie, like... They're leaning heavily on LaMarcus Aldridge and Cam Thomas right now.
I mean, they're leaning heavily on LaMarcus Aldridge, but come playoff time, I think how much he plays is going to be very matchup dependent. We got a very clear preview of that. How much did he play against the Warriors?
Well, when he was out there, he was a human target dummy for them in pick and roll. I mean, they just attacked him relentlessly.
He didn't play until the third quarter, I believe.
Yeah, second half. Yep.
I mean, so I think that, you know, because of obvious defensive limitations, that there's going to be potentially some playoff matchups where he's a non-factor. And that's tough when he's one of your best players.
The weirdest part about watching that team last week, because I saw that Warriors game with Timmy B, and then I stayed and watched the Cavs game. And both of those teams are hurt.
Cavs played them in Cleveland this week and in Brooklyn last week.
That first Cavs Nets game in Brooklyn was probably the worst game I've watched all year. It was horrible.
Well, you've been watching the Warriors. I mean, it's hard. Your standard is way too high.
That is true.
Bontemps watched Celtics Rockets last night. He ain't playing any violins.
there's a lot of bad basketball going on at times. But I say that because when you watch that Brooklyn team. And understandably, Joe Harris is out. Who the hell knows what's going to happen with Kyrie? They're dealing with some other injuries. It was like, okay, is Kevin's going to score? All right. Is James going to get to the basket and score? Okay. And then you're like, well, what else is going to happen? And can you really count on LaMarcus Aldridge night after night after night, especially in the context of our conversation in a playoff series? It looked like such a flawed team, and having not been able to see them a lot so far this year because of how well the Warriors have done, I'm looking at that team and trying to remind myself, okay, it's November. They got plenty of time. And B, to your point, they can make a move or two and things can change. But when you watch that team, they are so heavily dependent on Kevin and Harden. And those two are unbelievable, especially Durant, but it just looks like a team that is a piece short. And we know what the piece could be, but even more, if you make a move, even if you move somebody else on that roster, I just don't feel like watching that group right now that they are going to get to that place where they need to be.
They need James Harden to be an MVP caliber player. And
he's not that.
Can he work his way into shape and stay healthy and be that guy later in the season going to the playoffs? That's the question. Because, look, Durant is obviously, you know, he's a legit MVP candidate. Harden has been better in November than he was in October, but he's still not, you know, he's not the guy that we've watched for the last 8-10 years.
Well, they've won 11 of their last 13. And Harden has 4 double-digit free throw games in his last 6. Although Monday night when I was there, he wasn't getting the calls and he was complaining about it. He only got 4 free throws. Despite the fact that they have been pretty banged up with role players, plus Kyrie, obviously. So there's positives of going there. The problem is that they get wiped off the floor by the Warriors, and it's a little sobering. So
meanwhile, the Bucks were doubling up Knicks Orlando Magic in the third quarter last night with their full complement of players. And now that they're finally healthy, at least except for Brooke Lopez, who's still out with his back issue, they're looking awfully, awfully good. And if I'm the Nets, I'm looking over at them saying, you know, if we got to assume at this point, we're not going to have Kyrie, if I'm the Nets, you got to find a way to get some more pieces ahead of the playoffs, because that Bucks team looks awfully good.
Hashtag analysis.
How in the world did the Knicks lose twice at the Garden to the Magic?
Because the Knicks starting lineup.
Oh.
If you look at lineup numbers, and we've got the machine popping in here, so the machine is well aware of this. The Knicks starting lineup, you throw it in there, it's like Knicks starting lineup, Rockets starting lineup. I mean, that's how bad they are in terms of like net rating, plus minus, all that kind of. The Knicks starting lineup is absolutely atrocious. It's amazing.
And the Magic starting lineup is like weirdly good together, isn't it?
Mo Bamba, baby.
It has been weirdly good. Cole Anthony has been very good for them this year.
Well, they didn't have Cole Anthony last night, and they got beat by 1,000,006.
That is true.
Fredell, why are you just giggling and laughing?
Have you met Fredell?
All right. Thank you to Nick Friedel for joining us. Nick, have a good holiday. We'll see you soon.
I miss you guys. See you later.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Take care. Joining us now from Seattle, we put him on last because it's early out there and the machine has to charge overnight.
We also had to have an adult come in the room after the last two chats. So
it's been a little bit rough, Kevin Pelton. There's been some Syracuse Bonaventure stuff going on here.
Yeah, I got some of it on the phone yesterday. I get it residually because Mike Hopkins is from Syracuse, but I don't protest it because UW men's basketball has not been very good the last few seasons.
What about Isaiah
Stewart?
I was going to say
a lot of beef stew talk, Washington guy.
Yeah, I just hope that people don't think of him as primarily a fighter as opposed to a guy who's playing pretty well.
I think that ship has sailed, but that's okay.
in the public consciousness. I don't know how much Pistons basketball the rest of the world is watching.
Yeah, I don't know how much Pistons basketball Detroit is watching, but that's okay.
Well,
KP, according to Bontemps, why was I in trouble? I can't remember.
I'll let Kevin answer that.
I believe you did say that PR was the only way we had of.
All right. Well, that was.
Yeah, I remember that. And I would like to take full credit for defending your nerdy honor right here on this podcast.
I don't look at social media mentions. So you guys can say whatever you want to me, whether it's positive or negative. Trust me, I'm not going to see it. I haven't looked at a Twitter mention in like 7 or 8 years. But that was, I was obviously a misstatement, Pelton.
Yeah.
I certainly can't tell you the component that goes into warp, but I'm aware of its existence. It was a misstatement. It was not because of ignorance, but
you are warping the reality of the NBA statistical realm.
You know, I don't make an assumption that all of our listeners know what PER is.
By the way, for our listeners who don't know what PER is, they should go buy Seth Partnow's book, Midrange Theory, which came out last week. And I wrote the foreword to, which I meant to say on the pod last week. And I forgot. It's a great book.
How many, like, was it one big run on sentence, the foreword?
It was not.
It must have been heavily edited.
I'm still waiting for my copy. I read an advanced copy back over the summer, but your forward wasn't in there, so I still haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, they're probably still deciding whether they were going to actually have it in the book or not, which is an understandable move.
But to go back to the actual point, one of the things that's happened is PER, it tends at this point to really favor big men in particular. So Jokic and I think Giannis last year are the two highest scores of all time. And it seems unlikely to me that those are actually the two best seasons of all time. If you go through the PER leaderboard, it's like 10 of the top 18 are centers at this point. And that's one of those things that, you know, was designed by John Hollinger, our colleague back in the late 90s when the game was played totally differently. And, you know, this is true of a lot of metrics. Win shares, which is also on Basketball Reference, has the same issue where it tends to favor big men. And so does my wins above replacement player metric. But the adjustment that I made to it a couple of years ago is to use a different replacement level for players based on their position. So when you adjust for that, you know, I think Nikola Jokic has probably still been the best player in the league on a per minute basis this season, but it's not as extreme a gap with Steph Curry as it might look in some of those advanced metrics.
Well, my only point was Jokic was having a great season and maybe the best season he's ever had. And I was just calling attention to that fact. Since
you know, Wendy is the long time president of the Nikola Jokic MVP campaign. You know, Wendy's been on that bandwagon since
years, like, right, Tim?
I think since like 3 minutes before Jokic got the trophy.
I did vote for Jokic for MVP last year. And also, when we had the big argument, it was before Embiid's last injury, which knocked him out for a lot more games. But I know that that's not what you're interested in hearing.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Come on. I'm waiting for it. Go ahead. Jokic speaking just missed a couple of games. Go ahead. Say yeah. He's ineligible.
By the way, Jokic, you see how Jokic dresses on the sideline? That's no, how what's that's he how doing? An MVP dresses. He dresses spectacularly. He's
Jokic? Yes.
He is absolutely dressed.
What's
Watch
he wearing?
Nikola Jokic. Look it up on Getty. Go find what he's wearing. He is.
They don't give me the passwords to crap.
Nikola Jokic is the best dressed man in the NBA right now on the side. He's certainly better dressed than Kyle Kuzma. Good God.
Oh my God. That seriously, there should be a suspension coming his way. You cannot wear that. What are you doing? Like, I don't even understand. Why would you want a sweater where your arms are only like halfway down the sleeves? I don't get it.
I mean,
like, you can't eat. You can't go out to dinner wearing that thing. You can't possibly eat.
He's obviously doing it for shock value, that he got what he wanted out of it. If you don't know, just set a search, Google Kuzma, and you'll see it. It'll be the first image that pops up. Yeah, I can't believe anybody.
Sports Center, he got everywhere. That was the whole goal.
That was the point. But I will say, I've talked with Kuzma about his fashion in the past, like personally. And you know, I've
you guys very two, similar fashion taste.
I was gonna
taste,
say
right?
Two fashionistas just chopping it up.
We actually did. We actually did a little thing, a little TV segment for it at the All-Star Game.
Was he part of Fire or Ice or that or this is not part of that? Oh, he was.
Yeah, this is Fire. Yeah, is this Fire? Yeah,
is this Fire? Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
He made a joke about my fashion, but let me just say, just. You know, for whatever you want to say about Kuzma's fashion choices, I will say one time when Kuzma was on the jump, I think it was the first time he was ever on the jump, he had his personal stylist with him. And like during the commercial breaks, the stylist was coming over and just doing little alterations to like the folds in his sweater and like the folds on his wrist. I mean, he definitely puts a lot of time and effort into it. So,
well, but that, I mean, if that stylist said, picked that sweater last night, she needs to be fired.
Well, I said this to Kyle while we were doing that thing a couple of years ago. I said, I see who you've been dating and you shouldn't change anything. Whatever you're doing, you can stick right with what you're doing. Don't listen to me. But check out Jokic, the way he's dressing. That's how an MVP dresses. Just want to point that out. Pelton, another thing I want to put a little sunlight on, so to speak, not just Jokic, the way he was playing, but how about the 13-game winning streak, Phoenix Suns? Very much under the radar. Some of it is because they don't really have a signature win in there. We talked about them on the pod a little bit last week, but they've kept winning ever since. And I don't know if you... other thing is DeAndre Ayton is back and he's putting up double doubles again. Looks healthy after that leg injury. I wanted to know what trends that you've seen from them so far that may be lasting beyond this winning streak.
Yeah, I think overall it looks like a very similar team to last season, again in the top 10 on both sides of the ball. And I think that maybe the most notable thing about this winning streak is what you mentioned, that they did it for six games without DeAndre Ayton. This is a team that had minimal injuries throughout last season and still really hasn't this year, but they only had 22 games lost to injury by their starters all season last year. 8-6 are the only they've had this year. And they didn't miss a beat because JaVale McGee has been awesome for them. He's maybe played as well or better than DeAndre Ayton thus far. They're protecting the rim better with him. That's one of the reasons I think they're a little bit better defensively than they were last season when they were undersized when they came in off the bench with either Dario Saric, who's out with that ACL injury he had in the finals, or Frank Kaminsky, who also has actually played pretty well with Ayton out of the lineup, even though he's now...
Well, Kaminsky is hurt. Yeah, he's indefinitely out.
Yeah. And JaVale has been more efficient offensively than Ayton and also remarkably has a higher usage rate, which is not something I would have expected. He's getting lobs from...
Well, it's something that JaVale would have expected.
But it's not the post-ups to nowhere that we saw last year in Cleveland. It's a lot of him finishing at the rim, which is what he should be doing and was doing for two really good teams in the Warriors and the Lakers before that kind of lost season for him. So that's I think, you know, how much that's going to matter in the playoffs if you're going up against a team like the Clippers that goes super small, or, you know, who knows. But over the course of the regular season, McGee, I think, has made them a stronger team.
And then the other thing is they're the best closing team in the league. They are plus 34 in 23 clutch minutes for a cool net rating of plus 54.2.
It's not bad. Wow, look at McMahon bringing the advanced stats with the machine.
Advanced Cajone factor stats there, baby. I mean, but seriously, like, they're not blowing the doors off offensively at this point. I think, you know, that they're not operating at peak efficiency offensively. They're a solid defensive team, and if it's close, they're probably going to win. And that's a pretty good formula for putting together a winning streak against so-so competition.
And so-so might be a little generous. According to Basketball Reference's simple rating system, they've played the easiest schedule in the league, although that doesn't account for home and away. I think
that's getting the Mavericks without Luka twice as well. Like, they've played a soft schedule, but they've put together a ton of wins against a soft schedule.
But where that really comes into the play is the difference between them and the Utah Jazz, who have struggled in close games, you know, in basically dead even net rating in those clutch situations. The Jazz have a way better point differential because when they beat teams, it's usually by 25, but Phoenix is ahead of them in the standings. And, you know, that's going to potentially determine who's 2-3 in the West if Golden State continues running away with the conference.
Yeah, the little Jazzy's had a tough one last night. Jaren Jackson Jr., second huge three of the season, I would say. Had one that was a dagger against the Clippers.
Memphis. I don't know what you're going to get with Memphis this year. Sometimes they score 140. Sometimes they give up 140. Sometimes they lose by 40. Sometimes they win big. They were the seventh best defensive team last year. They're in the bottom three this year.
Which has surprised me because I thought, okay, you know, Adams for Valanciunas, I thought, okay, it's at least a defensive upgrade. But you say sometimes they give up 140. I would say oftentimes they give up 140. Sometimes they score 140.
Yeah. Well, they've been on the inverse. So I don't know. I sort of feel guilty, Bontemps, that we're not talking about the Suns more. But I don't know what to say. Then I still want to see. Their record is awesome. I'm still not sure though. I'm still not sure. Whether they're in the Warriors League. So we'll see as they play each other a few times in the next few weeks.
Well, I mean, look, they play the Cavs on Wednesday. They play. I'm going to see them play at New York on Friday, and then Saturday night, Suns at Nets, and Tuesday, Warriors at Suns. So we'll see. Well, by the time we talk again after the holiday, we'll see in a couple marquee games for the Suns and we'll see what they look like. But I think, as we talked about last week, I think they're the team that's best positioned to beat Golden State in the West as of now. And, you know, they've got the most versatility, I think, to play big or small of those teams in the West. And, you know, they're like the man said, you get into late game situations with them, they've proven to be able to execute. So, you know, I'm really interested to see those games and see what they look like, because they have every bit of the look of a team that's going to be going deep in the playoffs again. And, you know, I certainly hope we get to see Warriors Suns. I think that could be a hell of a series.
I was going to say another Chris Paul, Steph Curry playoff series.
That would be pretty fun too.
I'd be okay with that.
Also, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could look to make a trade to add to this roster. They have
unless it costs money.
Well,
it's also incredible. We're talking about all these backup center issues with them, and they spent the 10th pick in the draft last year on Jalen Smith, who they then didn't pick up his third year option, which is an unbelievable turn of events to not pick up a third year option on a lottery pick.
But would Tyrese Halliburton have fit there?
It's truly unbelievable. I know. It's still unbelievable. They may have won the title if they drafted Tyrese Halliburton. I mean, it's just crazy.
Now they've made some really good decisions too, but
they've done a great job, but that one hurts.
So the question is, so they've been attached on and off for months to Thaddeus Young. And I'm not sure. I mean, the Spurs are not headed anywhere this year. I'm not sure the Spurs are interested in re-signing him. I'm not sure what they want for him, and I'm not sure whether another team can beat the Suns. I'm not even going to get into speculation as to what they might have offered. But if they can get Thad Young, that would be a guy who would really be a nice addition, because adding another versatile big there who defends with experience, if they could pull that off.
That's a role he played last year at Chicago, and he was great.
To the point earlier, that's kind of what you need a lot of times when teams go small in the playoffs, as well as JaVale has played. So, and they could make it work without affecting their rotation. They've got that Jalen Smith contract that now is expiring because they didn't pick up his option. And then Šarić would probably have to be the rest of the matching salary. He's got 1 year left.
Yeah, they have a couple of guys on their roster who they can't trade for a while. So I don't think that we'll necessarily see that trade soon. And I'm not sure that, you know, if I was San Antonio and I wanted to do something, I would wait for the full market to flush itself out. But and maybe the Suns will go a completely other direction. But I'm just saying, like, keeping an eye on that prospect, that's a possible trade that could affect the balance of power or the title race. And so you know, I, like I said, I think the Nets potentially to see, let's see how Cam Thomas plays and whether they can trust him and whether or not that emboldens them to make a move, consider making a move with Joe Harris, and whether the Suns are willing to pay both in assets and money, because if you're going to use a future first or a future pick for Thad Young, you probably are going to want to re-sign him, and that's going to be expensive, mm-hmm. especially with Ayton dangling out there. I'm not saying they're going to do these deals, but I would keep an eye on those. Those are the, you know, early on here, things that I'm watching.
Well, and then you're also keeping an eye on the Warriors because they've got a stockpile of you know, young, unproven at this point talent, but young talent that might have some value. And, you know, you've talked about their cash flow situation. So the Warriors are, I think, definitely at least positioned if they want to be aggressive to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who are the other possible targets out there, you know, role players. I know, you know, we're going to hear about Terrence Ross out of Orlando at some point this season. I mean, I would say it's decent chance of him being traded, and he could be a role-playing scorer for somebody. We'll see as the time goes on. I mean, I think Ricky Rubio is an interesting guy. He's been terrific for the Cavs. Now they've lost Colin Sexton for the year. So, and plus he's, you know, the Cavs have designs on making the playoffs themselves, although with Mobley out, they've taken it in the teeth and lost four in a row. But, you know, the Cavs may come to February and think that it might be smart to trade Rubio, and you could be a team that could benefit from him. Although he makes $18 million, that's a big number to move. But, you know, these are some of the guys who I think could be interesting. I don't think we're not talking about stars here, but the types of moves that if contenders made could make a difference. So we're already starting to see how that's developing. Bontemps, you have anything for Pelton before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear what Pelton's thoughts on the MVP race, because I know he likes to talk about it a month into the season. So let's hear it. Let's see where he's at.
I mean, I think we just, you know, we have to make up our minds now and definitely not change them no matter what happens the next 5 months.
Put it in blood. Put it in Isaiah Stewart's blood. Put it down.
I would, in all seriousness, like to ask the machine, how many teams do you think are realistic championship contenders in the league as of today?
I mean, I still think the West is so wide open that you've probably got like six teams that could realistically win the West, depending on how health goes. Wow.
Well, that is a bold take right
Name
now.
Name them. I mean, like think that. So
I think it's a bold take right now.
Warriors, Suns, Jazz are probably going to be the top three in the conference. And then Lakers, Nuggets.
It's like McMahon has entered, or McTen has entered the chat.
Lakers, Nuggets, and Clippers, depending on how their health goes. I mean, I don't think you can rule any of those teams out for winning the West. The West is actually now, it's not as open as the East was back in the day, but now they're the conference you're looking at. Well, if we can just get to the finals, then we've got a puncher's chance to win. So East, I mean, I just heard your conversation talking about how many teams would you pick over the Bucks if they're healthy. And I agree that I think that, you know, the Nets, maybe the Heat, maybe the Sixers, if they can get something. I think at this point, I guess it's 10 teams that I think
have
one third of the league.
I mean, that's a lot higher answer than I predicted.
I don't think all of those teams have like a 5% chance of winning it. Some of them are probably at like 2%.
All right. Well, how many teams do you think are in it? So Daryl Morey, I think we've talked about on the pod before, it has a 5% theory, right? Where you if you have a 5% chance to win the title, then, you know, you have a real chance. How many teams do you think have a 5% chance?
I still might include all six of those West teams. I think that would probably knock out, oddly, the Sixers and Heat, I think, would be the teams that would be knocked out for me.
The Heat you would knock out. Wow.
Yeah, just because you have to get through probably
the two best teams in the league are in the East. Yeah. I'd still higher than
Let me ask you this, Pelton. Monday night, the 76ers, in a bad day for the Kings. I mean, they fired their coach. Some people might say it's a good day, but I don't think it's a good day.
They had somebody puke on the court Saturday night, then they fire their coach Sunday, then they lose to the Sixers on Monday with their whole starting lineup up.
Now, listen, this is the starting five for the 76ers on Monday night, a game in that they won over the Kings, who had just fired their coach. George Niang, Andre Drummond, Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybul, Furkan Korkmaz. That was their starting five. Four of their five regular starters. I mean, five if you count Ben Simmons. I mean, he hasn't started a game this year, but I guess if you include Ben Simmons not being there, all five of their normal starters out on the fifth game of a West Coast trip that has been long and hard. And the aforementioned Tyrese Halliburton, who was allegedly going to deliver the Suns a championship, was scoreless.
Nine assists, though. I saw the Sixers on Saturday night in Portland, where they fought back pretty well in the fourth quarter, given that we got kind of the first vintage Dame Lillard performance of the season. And Tyrese Maxey, who wasn't very efficient on Monday night without much support offensively. I think he shot like 8 of 22, but had some big plays down the stretch. And you know, my concern about him going into the season, he was one of my most intriguing players of the year when we talked about it in the low post before the season, was, look, he had these awesome games like game six of last year's conference final, semifinals against the Hawks. But he'd also have these games where he was just invisible and it didn't matter because he was coming off the bench and you'd play Simmons down the stretch anyway. This year, he has to deliver, and he has. He's been way more consistent since the first week of the season. His combination of quickness, the floater game, much like his former backcourt Emmanuel Quickly, the ability to kind of disguise whether it's going to be a floater or a lob has been huge. And then Andre Drummond getting him for the minimum has been awesome for Philly. He was really big down the stretch last night against Sacramento.
I wanted to ask you, that was the other thing I wanted to ask you, KP. How good do you think Tyrese Maxey is? Because people in Philly are anointing him now as the guy.
I mean, one of the things I've like come to change my mind about the last few years is I used to be pretty skeptical of these guards who were, you know, iffy skill wise, because Maxey still isn't much of a distributor. But I think now the way the rules are, even with potentially more contact on the perimeter now, if you have quickness and you can shoot at least a little bit, you're just so difficult to stop and keep from getting where you want on the court that players like that, I think, you know, have a lot of value. So if he can develop into at least an average 3-point shooter, then he's a solid starting point guard for years to come in the league. I don't know necessarily about all-star, but that's not off the table.
I've got a statistical question for you. What is the estimated volume of puke by that Kings fan the other night? We cannot go through this pod without, that was one of the best moments in NBA history. Luke Walton's final game in Sacramento, there being a 15-minute in-game delay because some Yahoo got hammered. And I like, that is one of the most, I've seen a lot of puking. That's one of the most impressive puke jobs I've ever seen in my life. There had to be minimum like 3.5 gallons of pukage.
It is amazing.
The best was the video of it, if you can tolerate it, is amazing because one, the people around, you know, just watching the people around like come to the realization of what's happening, you can like see them turn their heads and then they start running. Yes. And it's all these moments, like, you know, I could do a little novella about all the people around. At one point, like one of the courtside like security people called over it was during a timeout, and one of the ball boys was mopping up the court, like wiping up sweat. And he calls him over, and the ball boy's like, oh, I have to come over here and wipe up some liquid. And he comes running over and he gets like 12 feet away and he realizes what he's been called over to do. And he slams on the brakes.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm sorry, I'm not getting paid for this.
I'm not getting near that.
And the other thing is the guy just, you know, I don't want to, we're at the end of the pod here, but, you know, there were several rounds.
Dude,
the guy just sits there.
Puking on himself. And look, just calm as could be.
Yes, that's the thing. He just sort of sits there like, maybe if I don't move, nobody will notice.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it really, you talk about like a metaphor for the state of the Sacramento Kings over the last decade and a half. That was it.
I mean, just, you know, it's a premium customer when we're talking about first row. You know, listen, I will say this. They hand out those cards to those first row folks, actually like the first five rows, like in discipline, you know, you got to follow these rules. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you will be ejected and possibly banned like McMahon. Nowhere on that goes cards. Does it say anything about puking? So in his defense, you know, it's like the old George Costanza. Was that wrong? I didn't know that was wrong. All right. Thank you, Pelton. Guys, it's been an extra long. Hope everyone's been able to make it to the end here. Hopefully on your planes, trains, and automobiles. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Jackson.
Have safe travels and Thanksgiving, everybody.
And may you keep your Thanksgiving feast down.
What they've been telling McMahon since he was 8 years old. All right, everybody, hope you enjoy your holiday. We'll be back with you next week.
Adios, amigos.